Yeah. Hey guys, today we are diving into the intricate world of BDSM, focusing not on the sensationalized kink that everybody has already heard about, but on the profound psychological dimensions that shape this unique lifestyle. Our goal is to deepen our understanding of why and how individuals are drawn to these roles, exploring the mindset and the inner dynamics rather than just the mere surface of the practice. Joining us today are two extraordinary guests who are not only part of the BDSM community, but are also educators and advocates. Master Joshua, a respected dominant teacher and mentor in the scene, is committed to fostering understanding and guiding others in the exploration of power exchange relationships. Alongside him is Karma Said, who's been on the show once before. She's the author of the confessional memoir, Surviving Master Joshua, the BDSM memoir of an unfaithful wife. She brings her wisdom as a submissive and her passion for dispelling myths and misconceptions about the slave-master dynamic. So through our conversation with Master Joshua and Karma, we'll peel back the layers of BDSM to reveal the human desires, the ethical considerations, and the personal journeys that underlies these complex relationships. Together, we'll navigate the topic that often goes misunderstood, and we're aiming to create the and understand the empathy that goes into this and what it really means to be BDSM. So without further ado, here we go. I'm so happy that two of you are here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Who do you want to do a shout out to? Let's get that going that way first.
I want to give a shout out to all the copycats and catfish out there pretending to be me. I'm watching you guys. If anyone ever reaches out to you and says it's me, video call. Make sure you always video call to make sure that you're speaking to the right person.
Awesome. Karma, who do you want to do a shout out to?
I want to do a shout out to my OS, which started out as other slave, okay, and now is only slave.
Okay. We're going to learn about all this stuff today. I'm intrigued by this and I just want to learn more. Let's start with some easy stuff. But let's talk about, first of all, what is BDSM? For everyone who's watching and goes like, BDSM, I never heard of that. What does BDSM mean? What does it stand for?
It's an acronym, actually. B and D is bondage and discipline. D and S is dominance and submission. S and M is sadomasochism and masochism. Okay. Sadism and masochism.
Gotcha. Explain the BDSM and I guess polyamory. And what does that mean to you?
So for myself, the poly aspect and BDSM don't necessarily go hand in hand. They just happen to exist together in these relationships. Okay. Polyamory is having multiple partners with lifelong investments. I believe emotional investments play a big part in that too. Okay. It's not easy. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it reaps great rewards when you work on it.
Gotcha. Karma, what does it mean to you?
Well, the way I see it, those are two separate relationship structures or relational structures that dovetail, but are not tied. Polyamory means the freedom or the decision to have an intimate relationship with more than one partner. Okay. And BDSM means how I relate to said partners.
Now, I think the thing that most people, I guess, associate with BDSM is kind of the poly aspect and the slave-master relationship. So Joshua, talk about this, the slave and master relationship. From your side, being the master, what does that actually, how does that relationship look to you?
So my approach to it is more of a, like a martial arts structure where it's not really master slave. To me, it's master student. I personally believe at the end of the day, it's all role play. And I think we're all just trying to elevate each other. My role as the master in the relationship is to provide a foundation to help anyone in that power dynamic with me achieve their dreams, reach for their goals, tighten up their house, literal and figuratively.
When you talk about the house, I guess family is what we're talking about. What does that mean?
So when Carmen and I met, and she still is married with two children, and when people step into this lifestyle, I stress the importance of maintaining the ship. You know, don't sacrifice the home to run out and taste, right? It's like there's a lot to lose when you open some of these doors, and making sure that the home is maintained. I mean, that's a structure of support and safety. So it's like, I want to make sure that those are still held fast.
Okay. So Karma, last time you were on the show, we talked about your book, and we talked about the relationship between Joshua and your family. Let's talk about that again. Like, what is that relationship and how does that work?
Well, this is a consensual non-monogamy, as in my husband is aware of Joshua, and that relationship is kind of in flux. It's growing. I'd say the parallel that most people can understand is how a father of kids relates to his divorced wife's current partner.
Okay. Right?
I would say that's kind of like the emotional flavor of that relationship. However, I am not divorced.
That's okay.
Different. So he, I think, my husband relates to Joshua as a person he accepts in his life and would rather not deal too much with. And Joshua looks at my husband as a person he would like more of in his life and would very much like to get on the better side of. And yeah, that the connection right now is mostly through common social circles and common, like sometimes Joshua and I and other partners of Joshua would take my kids out, right? We'd have, we'd go to a picnic, we'd do stuff together. So it's almost like a two families, and the connection is always in flux and changing, but it is growing towards a more holistic one.
Gotcha. We didn't talk about like the kids and that side of it before, but how do the kids actually, Joshua, relate to you?
It's funny because we went to a water park about a month ago, and with the age difference, one of them is able to get on the larger, on the big boy rides, essentially, and the other one's still a little hesitant. It was adorable. But what we got to do, it was Karma and I, and we went, and Karma was able to stay with the younger one, and I went with the older one onto all the big boy rides, and we had a blast. It was like, it's like I can be that uncle, that crazy uncle.
Okay.
Who allows them to do the crazy things when no one's looking.
Gotcha. I don't know if they are old enough to understand the relationship. How do you explain it to them, Karma?
That's a great question. I am one that I am mulling over myself right now. I don't feel like they're old enough. I feel okay. Like they're still, I feel like that would have to wait till to get into the nitty gritty of it. I would feel that has to wait till at least teen. They're not teen, they're kids. Yeah. They're little kids. So like early elementary school kids.
Okay.
I feel like I can't, you know, I think there's going to be, they need a broader understanding of what is common and normal to accept uncommon. So
gotcha.
I'd have to wait with that for a few more years, I feel.
Gotcha. Okay, glad. That's I think, a reasonable expectation, you know. When they do get into, because they're going to grow up, they're going to get puberty, they're going to want to have sex because that's what kids do. And, you know, what kind of relationship will you expect them to have? Like if the boys are, I don't know if they're boys or girls, but if they're boys and they're going out with girls or girls and they're going out with boys, is it, are you going to be like the traditional mom dad? But it's like, son,
how could I
talk to you.
Listen, I can't. If I do stuff that, I mean, I can't throw stones, right? I would not be a traditional mom because how I define my own lifestyle, then it is based on what you want and negotiating what you really want, your heart's desire, with the world. So gotcha. If it ends up being like, mom, I want to have 5 girlfriends and I want 3 of them to be boys and 1 of them to be a cat, I'm going to have to be like, okay, let's figure out how to do it.
Okay. Except the cat. The cat has to be a human cat.
Yeah, the cat. I was going to ask about that, but we'll let it go for right now. Carla, last time you were on, you talked about the fact that you were a journalist and you wanted to explore this world, but you fell into it because of that. People can actually watch that interview again. But Joshua, how did you get into the BDSM? What was your journey from wherever you were to where you are now?
So I think a lot of it had to do with power and power through sex. And it's a really up and down road. I want to say, like, I started being stimulated when I was 5, sensory stimulation. I would rub my aunt's legs and I would get a hard on, and I was really young. Playing doctor in house when I was young as well. There's the power exchange elements in it, like teacher playing doctor, stuff like that. And then I started having sex at 12, and I had my first child at 18. And I think what happened, because I've processed this a bit, we got married and quickly separated. I was in the military and trying to get to see my daughter was a real pain, and it was really, really painful. And I think what I did through processing where I've gotten to is I think I developed sexually so I can maintain power in relationships from young. As time went on, what I realized is the importance of communication and connection to find genuine, to establish a genuine connection. It really changed my perspective on power over partners, mm-hmm. one would say, through sex. BDSM, I was in the military, I went in law enforcement, I did executive protection over like a 20-year period. And when I started doing executive protection, I picked up a client for the first time who was a gentleman out in Long Island, and he wanted to be treated like a dog. On the other side of the session, I could see how relieved he was, how validated he was, and it really impacted my life. I found purpose doing this work, mm-hmm. being able to hold space for folks and help them find their voice and authenticity was game changing for me. I've been doing it professionally now for over 10 years, and I wouldn't go back. I've helped too many people, and in the process I've helped myself. I've learned, I've developed, I've become the person that I want to be.
So let me dig deeper into that. When a lot of people think that BDSM is all about sex and torture and the dominant, the person who is, you know, controlling the session, abusing other people for their own pleasure, tell us about what it really is and the myths that people have. Instead of, let's clear those things up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the root of these BDSM relationships is communication, open and honest communication, transparency, integrity. The base has to be built on truth. Now, when you can access that level of truth between two people, the range that we're able to connect on, the more vulnerability we're able to bring to the table of ourselves and to create space for the other person is what allows the kinky stuff to happen. Now, it doesn't always happen like that. Like, you have people who come in and they're curious, they want to pick up toys and instruments and start playing right away. Cool. That's how some people go about it. But at the deeper end of it, it's all about the transparency and the integrity. Right, that's the hardest part about it is speaking your truth. And when you find a partner that can facilitate that space for you, it's game changing. Like, I wouldn't want to go back into a closet if I can come out and be myself with someone. And then once you experience that one time, it's like, well, why don't I replicate this? Why don't I just keep working at creating these connections and relationships and intimacy? Sorry, sex doesn't have to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Intimacy and sex aren't the same. Intimacy meaning if I can connect with someone really deeply and I can be vulnerable, we can share time together and do things that are close to my heart and or close to the other person's heart.
I want to get that same perspective from Karma. You are not the dominant in this relationship or in your family most of the time. Tell me about it from your side. Why, let me even ask more specifically, why go outside of the husband-wife relationship for this kind of connection instead of staying inside the relationship?
Right. Well, in my specific case, it was not exactly a choice. As I told you last time, but I'll bring it up again, I was covering a story and mm-hmm. about BDSM, and through while researching it, I met Joshua, and while researching Joshua and the story, I kind of fell for Joshua, and BDSM was not what was, it was two doors that opened simultaneously, right? So I discovered BDSM through Joshua, but I also discovered Joshua through BDSM. Mm-hmm. And it was, they were one and the same for me in the beginning. So it wasn't so much a decision to step outside of marriage to explore BDSM or poly or anything. It was more like I fell in love with a guy.
Why not bring your husband into it also? That I think a lot of people might ask that question.
Well, that's it. We did try in the beginning, however, and I did. It's always something I'm trying to do. However, he just, some people, amazingly enough, some people are not that into it. Some people, it just didn't speak to him that much. But he did give me permission to explore on my own. That's how this relationship evolved, by the fact that I was exploring, thinking I'm going to take this, I'm going to bring this home, and I'm going to, like Joshua said, I learned this and I'm going to use this on all my relationships. Ultimately doable in the beginning when all you see is your teacher, mm-hmm. is said teacher. And that's like, there is no difference at all between the principles you're learning and the human being who is teaching them. Very hard to duplicate while at that stage.
If there was no sex and none of the aspects of BDSM, would this relationship still be the same? If there was not that, the dominant submissive relationship, would it be different?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
It would. It took about 9 months until Joshua, even more, until Joshua and I actually had sex. And there was a physical connection there, but it was not sexual to begin with. So I would say, and the power exchange component is not sexual. There's a lot of it that comes to the surface when it does become sexual or when it is sexual. But in essence, it's just how I as a person relate to him as a person. So it's always kind of there. Uh-huh. It definitely becomes a lot more prominent and a lot more potent when it is sexual. Okay. But I don't think it would be different in its essence if there was no sexual component at all.
Okay. Joshua, what about you? Same.
That's a really good question. No, no. I how would it be different? I think because like she said, the first few months we were getting a feel for each other. I was also going through a really hard canceling when a former partner tried to Me Too me and made my life hell. When going through that, no one talks to you. Karma happened to come into the community with her story and wanted to start learning. It was actually around BDSM and religion. And then she heard about my situation. And for the first few months, it was adversarial. I thought she was like the sneaky reporter trying to get me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, she was the only one who was talking to me, hearing okay. my questions, hearing my statements. And the safety that she brought to me in these conversations for months and months and months. And my intention was to just show her who I am. As time progressed, I think the relationship would still be very similar because it wasn't always about power dynamics. It was about help, like help me and let me help you. And it's more along the lines of, if you're going to trust me, you have to let go of the handrails. I can't lead you if you don't follow. And that was like, because things became very turbulent. If you read, when you read the book, people out there, uh-huh. things become very turbulent for both of us. And I guess the straw that broke the camel's back was when she needed a firm hand in guidance. And my benchmark was, you have to tell your husband. Mm-hmm. And that was about a year after knowing each other, maybe a few months after starting being intimate and sexual. But the base of the relationship is always the truth. And I don't think with or without the power exchange, that's always prevalent. It's like, that's the staple.
Can I expand on it?
Yeah, please.
Can
yeah,
I expand please on do. It? So I was in a position where really not keeping a secret life or a double identity thing, having like a whole life on the side that was not being cleared, because while I had permission to explore, I did not have permission to go as far as I went. And the permission to explore never included being in love with a person, which I was from very early on. And so in a way, even when I was not outright lying, I was keeping back information. And the information I was keeping back is the kind that will take a marriage apart if it's not on the table. But I didn't have the guts to stand up and say, hey, this is what's happening. I'm developing a crush and an increasingly almost sexual, like I'm very,
very we were riding the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Barely skirting, you know, carnal crimes here. And I'm seeing him a lot and I'm talking to him a lot. And he's taking up a huge part of who I am and who I'm becoming, and I don't know who that is, but all of that is secret.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about it, and I'm not confessing to it, and I'm so scared that I'm petrified. I can't act. And that was eating me up. It was very much just destroying me kind of day after day. And but I couldn't act on it because I was too scared. I thought I'm going to lose my family. So gotcha. That gridlock was not sustainable. And what it took is, see, he also is polyamorous, of course. And at the time, what that meant to me is like, I'm nobody special. I'm one of many. And if I ever am in a bad place, if I get kicked out of my home, he's just going to shrug and, you know, go with somebody else, or he wouldn't be committed to the level that I would need him to be committed if this goes south, right?
Right.
So because of that, also, I just didn't have the courage to do what needed to be done, which is tell the truth. But what he said was, I know you want a commitment from me, and I would do it. I would be your master. Here's a collar. You can wear it. It'll be my collar. You'll be my submissive. But mm-hmm. you can only wear it after you tell your husband the truth.
Gotcha.
So yeah. that was the deal that broke the gridlock.
And that was when we started our power exchange relationship. It was like, because for the first few months, I was more like a guide.
Right? I kept arguing.
She kept arguing, pushing back. No, doing things her way. And it's like, all right. But when you got to a crossroad where, and this is where I meant it, let go of the handrail and uh-huh. lean into me, because my role in the power exchange relationships isn't to take, it isn't to gain, it isn't to direct. And I hate managing. It's okay. to elevate. The hard part about it also is I was trying to circumvent morals with ethics, right? And my role in it was, I knew she was married. In the ethical game, I need her consent. In the moral game, I need to understand that everyone's on the same page. Okay. And that was also difficult for me, because I have someone who's given me safe space for months in when I've been ostracized, and it was hard not to fall in love with her. Right? Because yeah. she held me. She held me, and she helped me feel safe.
There's two different directions I want to go with this. So we're just going to have to go both ways. there we go, right? I would say, like, in a lot of relationships, like, let's say psychologist and patient or client, whatever, and in coach mentor relationships with their students, I have heard, I've seen, I even know myself, that you need, or one often needs, someone to be their counselor. So psychologists they talk to, you know,
therapists need therapists
they talk to. In your situation, how does that work, since you're the leader, you're the person, the counselor in this case? Who do you get to talk to that's your dominant?
Dude, I love that, dude. It's, you know, my partners, I get to process and speak with them a lot. However, there's just some things I can't talk with them about. I go to therapy. I've done therapy for a period of time. I have other mentors and adults that I like to converse with. But also, I learn just as much from them as they learn from me, if not more. Do I get to submit? Sexually, I do. It's hard to turn the steering wheel over to anyone else, though, if we're not going the same direction. Like, your purpose has to be grand for me to submit to you. Like, I have to believe in what you're doing for me to say, I'm on this boat with you.
Okay.
So I don't have it's not about the inability, it's the lack of opportunity. Like, there's not a lot of other people out there who I feel that I could turn the wheel over to without becoming a notch on their belt. Right. Because okay. I don't want people to pursue me for that reason, to say, ooh, I dominated Master Joshua, right? So I'm mindful of that.
Would you have to go, like, out of your community, out of your state to get that relationship? Is it something you could find locally, or would you need to go two states over? You know,
so, something like that. Funny, I have a friend in Pennsylvania who's a lady, awesome, awesome mistress out there in near Allentown. And I've let her dominate me once, and it was phenomenal. because, like you said, everyone needs a release, and for having done this for so long, rarely do I get an opportunity to submit or bottom, because I'm observant of everything happening. Like, they have to have a skill set that I'm not doubting or questioning in order for me to just turn it off. that's taken me some time to work through to where I allow. Actually, yeah, I allow my partners to dominate me.
I'm like, what the hell? Really?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, 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 yeah. But outside of BDSM, outside of the sexual component, it's hard for me to find that space.
Okay. Do you inside the family? I don't know how the whole structure works. If you have to charge people for therapy sessions, I guess, or do you have another job that you do? How do you maintain your lifestyle?
So I do end of life doula work, and I do counseling for non-traditional sexual behavior. Essentially, I help people reconcile their relationship with their identity and find their voice. With the end of life doula work, I sit with folks who are advanced age, advanced illness, who want to process their life and share it with someone who's holding space. I started with a leather brother who is in his late 70s, and he's a gay man who's never come out the closet. And I pain for him, because it's like, imagine transitioning without speaking your truth. Mm-hmm. I came to this part through professional domination, learning what it is to hold space, accepting people as they are, helping them access different parts of their identity and bringing it to fruition.
Talk about that for a second, because I think the thing I've heard, and I think the audience is hearing, is that you're helping people. And go deeper into that. Like, how, give me some examples of people that have come to you and it's a BDSM thing, but you've helped them progress in other parts of their lives or become more thoughtful or thinking, or what is it? How do you help people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have an intake form. It starts with an intake form that takes about 4 to 5 hours to complete. After that, I'll review it and we'll set up a video call to build some rapport, talk through the intake form, ask any questions, and spend some time getting to know each other. We'll do our second session. It'll be our in-person session with the negotiation. They'll come in and we'll spend 2 to 3 hours together talking through the negotiation, learning what a person wants to feel like. After that session, we'll have our post-session follow-up, which comes 2 to 3 days later, to mitigate sub-drop, because after speaking to someone so openly and deeply about your identity, once you leave, a lot of people feel they go back into the closet.
Right.
So it's like those 2 or 3 days after our session, I like to call to follow up to see how they're doing emotionally. And then the last session, we review the whole process and talk about how does a person integrate the open communication, the transparency, the equality, because I approach it as equals at first, until we get into the space where now I'm leading and you're following, or dominating and you're submitting. Mm-hmm. The intake form in and of itself is a huge process of reflection and introspection. I need you to know yourself in order to talk to me. And that's what that intake form does. I've worked with priests. He's been a priest for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. And after our first session, I had to help him reconcile his relationship with God, right? Because as a man of the cloth for most of his life, he forgot about the man in the cloth.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, you're human too, right? And we spoke through the whole process of essentially, what does God want from you? And he said, God wants me to do things that help me live a fuller life. And we looked over the process, and it was like, at any point, did you feel less than? And he said, no. Did you feel more than? He said, yes. I said, is this what God wants for you? And that's a very summarized version of it.
Right.
That was one scenario. There was another woman. There was a woman who came to me who was diagnosed with cancer, and she wanted to feel beautiful one more time. And she brought her husband. And like, that's a lot of stress. That's a lot of pressure. But I couldn't say no to the person, right? So it's like, they came in and we did our full session with the husband observing, and the gratitude that they had at the end of it was incredible. There was a gentleman who came to me who, he was in his mid-50s, and he was never allowed to cry as a kid because boys don't cry. And
right.
He gets spanked and beat and all that stuff, and he couldn't cry. So he touched base with me, and we only had one session. I really respect him for it. He came in and we did our spanking session. I spanked him till he cried, and he was able to release like 40 years of of that trauma of having to hide his emotions. And I have stories, I have countless stories like that. There was another gentleman who was in an abusive marriage to his wife of over 30 something years. And through our process, because I'll speak with someone up to 12 hours before we actually meet in person. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we're meeting face to face, like, they know me and I know them. So abusive marriage for 30 years. He came to me, he was angry. He had a lot of anger issues. And through our time connecting and processing, by the time our session was over, I was holding him. He was on the floor crying. And I swear to God, it was wild. I felt like a ray of light come down onto us because his anger dissipated. It was like he was able to really talk through the roadblocks mm-hmm. that were keeping him from finding peace. And it's simply by holding space and having conversations. Because if a person can trust me with close to heart matters, they will definitely trust me when it comes to a flogger, right? It's like,
yeah,
they don't have to think twice about it.
Do they see you as a compassionate person or as a, I don't want to use the word mean, but as a strict person? Or how do most of the people you work with see you as you? How do they see you?
I would say compassionate. Compassionate is a good word. Compassionate unless, and this is rare, unless they're doing dumb shit mm-hmm. for themselves, right? I have a client that I called one time, and he was doing some shit he shouldn't have been doing. And yeah. And it's not even about BDSM at this point. It's about, dude, sit down and shut up and listen to what I have to say. This is what you're doing. This is what it looks like. This is where it looks like it's going. Talk to me. Yeah. Right? And it's like, they'll sit down and they'll have these conversations with me because I won't judge them. I don't care about the choices they make that they're making for themselves. I just want them to be good people. And I want to make sure that my energy goes into people who are doing the best for themselves.
Outside of the dungeon, how does your relationship work, Karma?
We're most of the time outside of the dungeon. How does it work? It's always in flux, and we put aside the hard-lined roles a long time ago. It doesn't suit either of us as people. It's cumbersome at some point to be. It's always a little bit of an issue to explain to people who are inside the lifestyle, how can you have a power dynamic without the trappings of one, or without the formalities of one, or without having to, like, I kneel when we both want to. That's about it. Uh-huh. And there is, I see him as a sort of older soul, right? I see him as somebody who knows and cares and can be relied on. And that is how my relationship to him is defined. That's about all there is to it.
Okay. I like that. It seems like it can be, the last question I want to ask before we go into the next section here is, between all of the people that you know, Joshua, is there ever a jealousy component?
No, of course not. Not when I'm looking.
Why do you ask him?
I'm asking both of you then. Is there?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Of course there is.
There's always one.
Always one.
No, because there's always one who's going to be jealous, right? We were talking about this the other day. It's all jokes aside. It's a time thing. It's an affection thing. It's a space thing. It's not easy, but jealousy absolutely exists. And it's not envy, which is poisonous. Jealousy can be healthy as well. But it does exist.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I wouldn't say there's always one who is jealous. All of us are jealous of each other because all of us are competing for time, and all of us end up giving up stuff that we would like to do or is important for us or we wish would be different for everybody else, right? It's because there's like one of the questions people ask me more, you know, ask me and ask him more is like, how do you do that time-wise? How do you divide? Like, it's hard enough with a family, a husband and a kids. How do you do it with a whole other family and him? How does he do it with a number of people?
Yes.
So I had a conversation with one, with another partner of his or companion, whatever, not long ago. And she asked, how do you all get along? And I said, it feels like being in a bag full of elbows sometimes, because even though we all love each other, we all end up sticking elbows in each other's ribs because there's just no room for wiggle.
Right.
Understanding the situation and being compassionate about it and using it as a tool to growth, knowing that it's a challenge and knowing that it's, you know, annoying at sometimes, yeah, is the way I find to carry it. And like he said, I wouldn't wish it to my worst enemy either. But it's the system we move in, so we make the best of it. And on the bright side of it, we're a family.
Gotcha. Let me ask you both. I'm going to ask you both the same question. You're standing in a stadium with 100,000 people, and you've got the microphone, and whatever you say at that session, they're going to live. They're going to believe. It's going to become part of the new cosmic reality. Karma, what is it that you want people to understand after they've listened to you here and they listen to you on that stage? What is it you want to get across? What's your message?
I'd say my message is follow your desires, even if they go against everything that makes sense and everything that the world says. Follow them and find a way to make it work with the world. But don't give them up because the world does not allow for them.
Okay. Joshua, what about you?
That was a good one. I would say to look inside. All the answers are already inside. The importance of introspection, understanding who we are and what we believe in, is what gives us our power, right? What we believe in and what we know to be true, especially the knowing to be true. Learn what you know to be true. And if you don't know, dig until you find it. Because there's a lot of power in knowing and a lot of power in believing.
Okay. I love our discussion so far. I want people to learn more about the two of you. Not that you haven't so far, but I'm going to go deeper, faster. I don't know. Let's see how it goes. We're going to play a game right now called This or That. I'm going to give you two choices. You can pick one or the other, but not neither or both. And I think I'll ask you both the same question, but I don't want to go, you know, always Joshua first or always Karma first. We're going to go back and forth on that. Okay. So let's start easy and then go a little bit harder and harder and harder. And we'll do these. There's no thinking about the questions. Just what do you think? You can explain it some if you have to. Joshua, we'll start with you. Dominance or submission?
Submission.
Okay. Karma.
Dominance or submission?
Yeah.
Submission to him.
All right. How about Karma, leather or lace?
Leather.
Okay.
Leather.
Leather. Got it. Joshua, ropes or handcuffs?
Rope.
Okay. Karma?
Rope if I don't have to tie it.
Karma, public play or private play?
Private.
Really?
Joshua?
Private.
How about Joshua, verbal commands or nonverbal signals?
Nonverbals.
Okay. Karma.
Nonverbals.
Okay. Karma, negotiated scene or spontaneous play?
Spontaneous.
Spontaneous.
Okay. Joshua, physical connection or emotional connection?
That should be obvious.
Maybe he's struggling with it though.
it's tough because the emotional connection, there's a lot in there, right? But physical connection, I think physical connection can come through emotional connection. Emotional connection doesn't always come through physical connection. So I'll go with emotional connection.
Okay. Karma, what about you?
Emotional, physical always follows.
Okay. Karma, teaching BDSM or learning new techniques?
Learning.
Learning, okay. Joshua?
Teaching. Teaching, okay. I like teaching because I get to see the impact that it has. Oh!
Whoa. Okay, let me see. Joshua, solo exploration or paired exploration?
Solo.
Okay. Karma. Paired. Okay. Paired. What about karma? Control the pain or control the pleasure?
Control pleasure. Why would you even ask?
Control pleasure. Yes.
I don't know. I'm not into it yet. Right. Joshua, personal growth or relationship growth in BDSM?
Personal growth.
Okay. Karma?
Same. Personal.
Personal growth. Okay. Karma, strict rules or flexible guidelines?
Flexible guidelines.
Yeah. Joshua?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. It all depends. But I like flexible guidelines.
Okay. Joshua, traditional roles or fluid roles?
Fluid roles.
Fluid. Yeah.
Fluid. Okay. Karma, BDSM as art or BDSM as therapy?
Therapy.
I can see it as therapy. I think that makes a lot of sense. Joshua, long-term commitment or short-term exploration?
It's like the truth or the correct answer.
Hey, I just asked the question. The truth or the
correct answer? Short-term.
Okay. He went with the truth.
Karma, what about you?
Long term.
Okay. We'll have another show in a couple of weeks about that. Okay. Karma, safety or thrill?
Thrill.
Thrill. Yeah. Thrill,
okay. Joshua, understanding self or understanding others through BDSM?
Understanding others.
Okay. Karma?
Understanding others.
Okay. Karma, first about this. How about openness about BDSM or privacy?
I would prefer openness. If I can't have that, I want privacy, but openness.
Openness.
Okay. Well, you've got your whole book, so that's pretty open, you know. Right? You got that going on.
I'm wearing the mask, aren't I? I'm still wearing the mask.
You got, but I can actually understand that for safety because there are a lot of people that may not understand what you're saying, so. Joshua, ethical guidelines or personal morals?
Personal morals.
Okay, we talked about that. What about you, Karma?
Personal morals.
Okay. I'll ask one more. Just one more for both of you. Karma first. BDSM community or individual journey?
Good one. Ultimately, community. Ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Individual journey.
Okay. You guys have been amazing, and this has been like a super fun conversation. I hope people actually do get what you've been putting out there and understand a little bit more. It's not always just about the about the sex, and there is a communication component that is super important. So I think we got that out there.
Can I drop in one more message?
Please do. Yeah.
If you're thinking about stepping into the lifestyle, learn in education spaces first. Like, expose yourself through education spaces and events that are not in play spaces so that you can see the people behind everything happening. There's a philosophy that we have called people before kink. And that approach is what has helped a lot of people heal through their journey when they work with us. Essentially, you are who you are before what you do. And there's an innate value to who we are as human beings that surpass anything. Going into it as an equal, understanding that we are spectrums, we're not black or white. We have a full range of feelings and thoughts and desires. Explore all of it.
Gotcha. I love that. And for people who still need to ask more questions about you, you've got your website, masterjoshua.com. And we also have kinkcollective.net. And the for everyone who's listening, instead of watching, it's on the screen, it's ssdce.org. Joshua, what does SSDCE stand for?
That stands for Sanctuary for Spiritual Development and Consciousness Expansion.
Okay, so ssdce.org.
Right
it did. It rolled. It's like, I got that. And then, Karma, you've got your book, which is Surviving Master Joshua, but your website is survivingmasterjoshua.com. Exactly. And you have carnalculturepublishing.com, so they can get in touch with you that way. Yes. You guys have been awesome. I really appreciate you being here. And, we have to do some more of this in the future. We'll see how it goes.
You have the best question.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.